Hello, this is Kevin Doherty, your host for Just Thinking. I am the Chief Strategy Officer for 806 Technologies. And today I have a very special guest, Yuri Calderon. I'm not going to tell you much about Yuri. I want him to tell who he is and what he does. So I'm just going to hand the mic over to Yuri. Welcome, Yuri. Glad you're on Just Thinking.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you for having me on your podcast. My name is Yuri Calderon. I am the newly appointed executive director for the Small School Districts Association. Been in the role for about a month and a half, and I'm enjoying it every day.
Nice.
My background is I am an education lawyer. I practiced law for about 30 years, but also in addition to practicing law, I did a lot of consulting for small school districts and large school districts. And most of my consulting was in the area of facilities and on the business side of school districts. And the reason that I got involved in that is because I found that I could do more good being on the front end of problems as opposed to being on the back end of problems. As a lawyer, usually the problems are already baked and you're either in litigation or you're trying to untangle something that's fairly complicated. And so I found that I could do more good and be more helpful by being a consultant as opposed to a lawyer. And in that role, I was asked to serve as a CBO for a small school district, Cold Spring School District in Santa Barbara. And I served as a CBO. It was an interim position, and I ended up serving for 5 years and enjoyed every day of it. I found that my passion really is being around the kids, being around a program that's functioning very effectively, being able to work not only with the superintendent, but with the board of trustees, and also with the community. And there's nothing more exciting and more fun than being at a picnic on opening day. So that's a little bit about me, Kevin.
Well, let's do this. I love that. Would you mind giving that superintendent a shout out?
Absolutely. I worked for probably one of the most exciting superintendents in the state of California. Her name is Dr. Amy Alzina. She's been the superintendent. I think she's starting her seventh year at Cold Spring, but she also worked as an assistant superintendent at Santa Barbara Unified. And she's a very talented individual. Her school this past year performed at 99% at or above at grade level or exceeding grade level for both English language arts and math. And I think the science scores, the CAST scores were also at the top of the chart. So she's very proud of that accomplishment. She did tell her board that her goal was to have 100%. And she is almost there.
She fell just a little bit short there at 99. Oh, my word.
Well, yeah, you know, her school has been the top performing school district in the state of California based on the CASP scores for the past, I think, 5 years.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. And I mentioned I through social media, the wonders of social media have gotten to know her some and been so impressed. And one of the things she just shouted out about on social media was the start of the school year. And I know that's something that you and I have talked a little bit about as well. So I'm going to give you a chance to speak to that topic as well, Yuri.
Yeah, Kevin, I think one of the most exciting parts of having joined the organization in July is getting to basically applaud what the school districts are doing this time of year. I mean, starting off the school year is one of the most exciting things that a superintendent does. And at a school, not only the superintendent, but the school, all the staff, the community, it is just an amazing time to bring the kids back. And I can tell you these folks are so passionate about what they're doing, getting the campus ready. The time they spend over the summer, construction projects, cleaning, getting everything just perfect for those kids as they come on that first day It's just so exciting and inspiring to see what our superintendents and our school staff are doing at this time of year. And I love it. It's the best time of the year.
It's an incredible energy. And as you and I talked about before, it's a really unique energy. This fresh start that our schools give our students, our teachers, our administrators, the parents, the whole community, it's just awesome. I did notice at the district where you work that they have a garden too, which looked really cool. I was checking out those pictures. Before I go to the next question in this podcast, I wanted to ask a little bit about that garden. Do you know much about it, Terry?
Kevin, I was part of the, like that greenhouse that's there. I built that on a weekend. We bought a kit and I was out there on the weekend building it. That garden was built by the community. That basically cost the district nothing. And this is what the power of what communities do when they come together and they're motivated and they're inspired to be a part of the educational program. We had parents build the beds in the garden. And then this past summer, we added some flagstone walkways, and that's what you can see in the pictures that Amy was. And we, what an exciting thing to see, and the kids love it. With the universal meals, you know, we have a kitchen. We had to feed the kids twice a day, so we had to build a kitchen on the campus. And so what we've decided, and Amy put this together, is brought in a chef. They're cooking every meal fresh, and they're using the produce from the garden to in the ingredients for the meal. So the kids get to work as part of the garden program, in the beds, yes, growing their vegetables, and then they're eating the food during breakfast and lunch. So it's an amazing part of what's happening in schools when the communities come together and they're excited about the educational program.
I love that, Yuri. That is incredibly awesome on so many levels. You know, I was an elementary school teacher before becoming a principal, and then, you know, now working to serve districts across the nation. But as a classroom teacher, I worked with this amazing fellow teacher, and I then moved to Houston, and you and I have that connection. Spent some time in Houston, and I must have called this teacher friend of mine one time and said I was stressed out about something, and she said, "Kevin, put your hands in the soil. Go out, plant some flowers, pull some weeds, get your hands in the soil. You'll be amazed by the therapeutic effect that you'll experience." And she was right. It's
Kevin, amazing. That's so true. I tell you that when things get a little bit rough or you're dealing with some complicated issues, you would find me in the garden picking at strawberry and just eating the strawberry. And sometimes I'll walk out there and Dr. Alzina would be out there doing exactly the same thing. And interacting with the kids while you're doing it. You talk to them about what they're doing and you're watching them and they're making a salad right there. And you talk, and all the problems go away, right? Yeah. And all of a sudden you remember exactly what you're doing. This is why I'm doing this. This is why I'm putting the effort I'm putting in and solving these problems and getting these difficult things done, is because that result, those kids eating things they would have never eaten before sometimes in some cases, right? Yeah. Because they picked it and they put it together. And they have a great garden teacher, Christian Garfield, out there doing a great job with the kids. It's just great to see that.
Well, and I love what you just mentioned too about the conversations you would have while you're out in the garden, whether they were working in the garden or making a salad or whatever, because as a parent of two now grown kids, my son would never just talk to me like, "Hey son, how's it going? Good. Everything going well?" It's yes. One word answers, not much conversation, nothing like his dad in that regard. And yet I'd go out and throw a baseball with him. And when we play catch, he'd open up and start to talk or play ping pong or something. That's when I would get him to have conversations, not while we're just standing looking at each other trying to have a conversation. So I love this idea of building the relationships and the rapport with students around something like the garden. That's so powerful, Yuri.
I love it. I love it because it's so true, right? With all of our kids, and if we had that opportunity to learn that as parents early on, you understand that that's when the those beautiful moments happen, when you when you're working on an activity together and they just start opening up, right? They feel comfortable.
So your role is working with the small school districts, and we talked to just about one, how many there are, to just the tremendous beauty of the state of California and the diversity of the topography and the all of the various plants, the flora and fauna. It's just it's almost limitless there in California. But, you know, given how spread out it is and the fact that there are so many small districts, many of them rural districts, there are some unique challenges, I'm sure, that result from their location and things about that. So would you mind sharing a little bit about some of the challenges and opportunities that the rural districts of California face?
Absolutely, Kevin. I am, you know, as a new executive director in this new role, I mean, I've had the experience with Cold Spring and with some other school districts, but one of the most important things that I can do in my, especially my first year, is spending some time traveling around the state and getting to know some of these school, some of the rural school districts, some of the small urbans. I mean, there's the state is so large, right? It's so huge with such an amazing diversity. And I think this is why public education works best in small communities, right? And because the school districts are responsive to the needs of their community, especially in these smaller areas with unique and diverse interests and needs.
Yes.
And so I'm doing a listening tour, basically, and I'm going around the state. I've been in Mendocino and Humboldt. I've been up in Modoc, right on the border with Oregon and Nevada on the side, right in that corner of the state. Uh-huh. I've been in Tuolumne. I've been in Mono County, and I'm just getting around and visiting as much as I can so I can fully understand. But one of the things that was done by the organization before I got here or got started before I arrived was we partnered with Thrive, an organization out of San Diego, mm-hmm. and they are a nonprofit as well, and they're focused on providing resources to small rural school districts. And we partnered and we did a study about rural school districts and what are the needs. First of all, we focused on what are the benefits, what are the accomplishments and great things that are happening in these rural communities, but also what are some of the challenges and what are some solutions for those challenges. The paper is called Rural Inequities, Building Understanding and Offering Solutions. The paper is on our website at ssda.org. We just published it in July, mid-July, and now we're in the process of kicking that off as part of our platform for supporting rural school districts and advocating for rural school districts. So what we do as SSDA is representing small school districts across the state, which comprise of a little over 60-65% of the school districts in California are small, which are currently defined as having an average daily attendance of under 2,500.
Wow.
So 2,500, call it enrollment if you want. Average daily attendance is the average of the attendance over the course of the school year.
Yes.
We also represent and have as members school districts that are between 2,500 and 5,000. And the reason for that is because our resources are extremely valuable. And we recognize that the partnership with these slightly larger school districts is very useful in advocating for the smalls because they also recognize some of those challenges.
Yes.
And so what we've kind of developed is three main areas of what we call the need to represent these rural school districts. And that is in funding, because we feel that there's a need to address an inequity in the way rurals are funded because of the cost of doing business in a rural area.
Right.
We also are very focused on local control, and I can talk a little bit about that in a minute. But, and then the third area is the staffing pipeline.
Yes.
Rural school districts face an enormous challenge in finding qualified staff members that want to remain in those communities because they're recruited or they go to school and then they're recruited to stay in urban areas. But to bring them back or bring them back to their communities or just simply to recruit people to come out and live in the rural areas. And that's because they don't have the same resources to pay what urban school districts are paying teachers or staff members, right? And then there's challenges with housing and challenges with other in other areas. One of the key things that we're finding is that in many of these rural areas, there are no programs that prepare people to be certificated teachers, to be teachers, to be administrators. Yeah. And so what happens is that causes people who do want to be teachers to have to go to urban areas or to large areas where, and then they're recruited and they don't come back, right? And so how do we address that inequity? How do we focus and work with other nonprofits, universities, and you know the state to provide programs in these areas that will continue to draw folks or have programs like we're talking to a bank right now about how do we create a program that's uniquely focused on folks that want to live in rural areas or are willing to go live in rural areas to be able to afford a home or to buy a home.
Right.
So there are a lot of things that we can do that create creative incentives. But let me talk about local control, because I think that's one that I'm very passionate about, Kevin.
Yes, please.
You know, what ends up happening a lot and what creates a challenge for small school districts is that we talked about the excitement of the start of the school year, right? Uh-huh. That superintendent slash principal, because in many rural schools or small schools like Dr. Alzina, is both the principal and the superintendent of the school. So she's running the school as a principal, but she's also having to do the superintendent stuff. Local control becomes very important because often the programs and the remedies or the solutions that are being fashioned in Sacramento are very focused on a problem that is happening in an urban area or a large school district. Because those are the things that surface up, they get media attention, and then Sacramento wants to go fix it.
Right.
What often happens is they don't realize that those solutions actually cause impediments to small and rural school districts. Mm-hmm. And so what we have to do is educate Sacramento, educate whether it's CDE or the legislators or the governor's office, that these solutions need to carve out and they need to exempt or accept the small and rurals that aren't having the same problems that the urbans are having, right?
Yes.
They've been very responsive. They're addressing their community needs. And so what we're advocating for is let those rurals and small school districts continue to maintain that local control, which has been a very, very focused program of the state with the local control funding formula, is to say, we're going to stop handing out money with all this criteria and then requiring you to create a plan and then report back on how you did on that plan. Well, think about it. If you're the superintendent and you don't have the staff of an urban school district, right? Yes. Who's going to write that plan?
Yes.
Who's going to report on those results, right? It's the superintendent. And so what you're doing is you're taking that superintendent, who's also the principal, out of the classroom.
Right.
And you're taking them out of standing in front of the school, receiving the kids and receiving the parents and talking to the families about what's going on. And you're putting them in an office to write a report that is completely meaningless to a small and rural community. And that's because Sacramento decided we're going to do it this way and you're going to report on this. And so we advocate and say, don't give us categorical funds. If you're going to give us money, just give us the money. Let us do what we know how to do best, which is to educate the kids and create results for our programs, right?
Yuri, everything you just said, I actually heard directly out of the mouths of some superintendents / principals. It was in Monterey at the Superintendent Symposium for AXA. And I happened to sit down at a table just to have my breakfast. And there were two guys sitting there too. We asked each other, what do you do? What do you do? Where are you from? And so forth. And what you're telling me is exactly what they expressed. And the thing that really struck me about these two individuals is They were incredibly intelligent. They were incredibly thoughtful, and they love their community. They don't want to move anywhere else. They love where they live. But they said, Kevin, we can't complete all these reports. We don't have time to complete them and do all of these other things. And so I'm going to be, they were very honest with me. They said, some of the reports don't get finished, or certainly don't get finished in a timely fashion, because we just can't do it all. So what you're sharing here, I heard again firsthand out of the mouths of some folks in the roles that you're working with.
I mean, I, you know, I in conversations just recently with superintendents, Heidi Torrex, Eastern Sierra, right? You know, she's telling me like, and it's true. There are something like 80 reports that superintendents have to write. And you know, may not be a big deal for a superintendent who's got a staff of five you know, in different departments writing these reports. But you know, Heidi at Eastern Sierra, whose schools rent, you know, are 20, 30 minutes apart from each other, she needs to spend time in those schools, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, taking her out of being visible in front of the families, in front of the kids, you
Yes.
know, supporting this the principals, making sure that, you know, that the programs are aligned with what the community wants. I mean, those are things we don't want to do to our small and rural school districts. And she's doing a phenomenal job out there. I mean, I was so pleased to see the campuses and what they do with with small staffs, small
Right,
schools, right?
right.
Think about a high school with less than 100 kids. I mean, how do you provide the electives and how do you provide the programming and some of the creative solutions and how they do that at Eastern Sierra and how they work with to create a football team. You know, that, you know, an eight-man football team, right? Because they have to play both offense and defense because they don't
Right.
have any kids who are interested. But they're so far away that they actually have to, they play in a league in Nevada, right? But
Yep.
these creative solutions that these superintendents are, that they're brilliant, motivated, and passionate superintendents coming up with these solutions so that kids have these amazing programs in these rural communities. And she's got this CTE program that's phenomenal. It's
Yeah, I love
this is
it.
my passion and my love
Yeah.
is visiting these schools and getting excited about what these superintendents are doing.
Well, and having somebody from the outside coming in and recognizing that, they probably don't get a whole lot of that. Not that they're seeking a lot of pats on the back, but let's face it, it doesn't hurt to hear some positive affirmations and some words of encouragement. So I have no doubt that's a very welcome by these individuals. Tell me the name again of that superintendent. I want to take note of that.
Yeah, Heidi Torrex,
Eddie
and
Torek.
she's the Eastern Sierra Unified School District, and they cover Mono Lake and going up towards Bridgeport area.
Okay.
Amazing and amazing staff, right? She's got an amazing crew and. Just doing some wonderful things. I spent some time with her and she visited the school sites, and could see that she, the passion she had in what she was doing. It's phenomenal. It's exciting,
Well,
right?
and you talked about one of the challenges being the staffing challenge and the staffing pipeline and so forth. So, in addition to that, is the whole issue of retention. So, not just attracting the new and needed staff due to attrition or whatever other reason, but retaining the great staff that you do have. And that's why it's so essential that those superintendents and principals be out there encouraging, supporting, uplifting. And if they're sitting behind a desk, behind a computer screen, filling out reports, they can't do that. And that, I imagine, would have a negative impact on retention as well.
It does. I mean, you know, the last thing we want is our superintendent, our leader, right? The instructional leader of a school district is sitting and writing reports, right? That one, I'll spend the vast majority of my time in Sacramento beating that drum and you know, and asking them to streamline. We've been asking them to streamline the LCAP. You know, The LCAP is a prime example. The LCAP is the Local Control Account and Accountability Plan that we have in California.
Yes.
And that plan ends up being close to 80 to 100 pages. In many cases, you're talking about a one school district. Mm-hmm. 80 pages. Now, I'm not against strategic planning, mm-hmm. having a strategic plan and implementing a strategic plan. But half the stuff in that LCAP is repetitive, duplicative, is unnecessary, right? And so we've been working really hard. I mean, I've got a task force working on streamlining the LCAP for small school districts. We've got that conversation happening with the State Board of Education. We've had superintendents testify before the State Board of Education on the need to really streamline this. And then if you're going to keep adding other plans, like, why would you want to do that? And you're distracting from your local control and accountability plan. So right. I got a plan on ELOP, on the Expanded right. Learning yes. Opportunities yes. Program. Why would that be a separate plan from your LCAP if your LCAP is supposed to be your strategic plan for your instructional program?
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
It should be all part of one strategic plan. And it should be designed around what, you know, your local goals and objectives and your actions are for locally that are communicated and developed in consultation with your community and your stakeholders.
You are singing my song, Yuri. This is the work that I do every day with my colleagues here at 806. So I love hearing that. And I love hearing ways in which we can all work together to help with that streamlining, so the focus for educators can be on what it needs to be on, and that's serving the learners. So, speaking of that, we're kind of coming to the close here, and you said at the beginning, you know, you have background as a lawyer. I kissed the Blarney Stone in Ireland, so I have the gift of gab. But for the thoughtfulness of our listeners and viewers, we're going to bring this conversation to a close for now, but it does need to be continued because I want to keep having this conversation, Yuri, beyond this particular episode. But I like to wrap things up by saying, is there anything else, Yuri, about which you're just thinking that I did not give you the opportunity to address in the course of this podcast?
I think a couple of things, Kevin. I think one of the things is, you know, one of my goals and my vision for the Small School District Association is to be an amazing resource for our small school districts. And so we've kicked off a new program that's called the E3 Forum. And that stands for Engage, Empower, and Elevate. And what we're going to be doing is going around the state and creating it's going to be a kind of a webcast of some very substantive topics that are relevant to our small school districts. And it's going to be open to everybody. It's going to be free. And the whole idea here is that we need it to be free because we need our small school districts to be able to access this without any barriers or impediments. So that's something that I'm very excited about. We kick off our first one on September 12th. We're going to do a webcast of the California blueprint and the particularly the math standards, and to help people understand how to tackle the math standards and how to be more effective to achieve results in student learning. So that's one of them. And then we're going to provide an opportunity for people to get to connect with some experts. So I'm very excited about, we're going to be doing those all over the state. So I'd like to continue the conversation and see how we can, you know, maybe be able to promote some of this with you.
Yes.
But the only other thing I want to say is I have an amazing board. You know, we talked a little bit offline about governing boards and how they work and what the benefit of that is.
Yes.
I have an amazing board of 15 superintendents across the state. Eric Bonickson is our president from Placerville. I have Nicole Newman, from Wheatland Union High School District, who's my vice president. And then I have a full board. Amy Alzina is on the board. Mm-hmm. Heidi is on the board. As an amazing board that that supports what we're doing, and they're, you know, we lean in, right?
Yes.
They are on that board because they want to help other small school districts. So there are veteran superintendents that are supporting other smalls and are available to partner with them to give them mentoring. We do a leadership institute that runs throughout the year. Many of our board members serve as mentors to the new superintendents because, you know, in smalls,
yes,
most of the hires are brand new superintendents that have been principals somewhere else, but they've never been a superintendent. Okay. And those roles are very different.
Yes.
And so we're mentoring them. We're providing that support. And so I'm excited about what I'm doing. I'm loving every day that I'm doing it. And so, and I'll leave with a final note, because I just want to congratulate all those superintendents who are, like we talked about it, that are, yes, starting off the school year with all that excitement, all that passion. They are why I do this, and why I know that when those kids show up, they're excited about learning. And that's so important, right? We create an environment now where kids love to be at school and they're excited to be back in school. And so I want to congratulate the superintendents, and I want to wish all the superintendents across the country a fantastic 24-25 school year.
Yes.
I know one of the big focuses for a lot of states, and yes, in California in particular, is mental wellness,
yes,
social emotional wellness, such an important factor because we're still faced with it after COVID, coming out of COVID. We're still dealing with some things. And I applaud all the superintendents that are tackling this issue to make the school environment a safe and healthy environment for our kids. So congratulations to everybody.
I second that, Yuri. Thank you, my friends, so much for this conversation today. I have no doubt there will be many nuggets that people will take away from the conversation. My biggest nugget is the E3, because I too have embraced those three E's. Engage, you start with engagement. Engagement leads to empowerment. The empowerment leads to elevation. So I love the order of the three E's as well, the E3 forum. So I can't wait to learn more. Yuri, thanks so much for being my guest today. And I look forward to our next time to visit.
Same here. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you for inviting me.